When you hit a like a massive traffic jam on the highway, there is always that one intrusive thought, like, what if I could just push a button and teleport my car to the destination?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You just want to, bypass all the physical constraints, like the asphalt, the other cars, the friction of the tires.
Right, but you can't because you are bound by the rules of the road. It's just, step by step, mile by mile, staring at brake lights.
Until someone comes along and basically says, hey, we don't actually need the road at all. What if we just fold the map so your starting point and your destination are physically touching?
And that is exactly what we are looking at today. So, welcome to the deep dive. We have this fascinating stack of theoretical papers in front of us, and our mission for you today is to explore what looks like, honestly, a literal cheat code for reality.
Yeah, a cheat code is a good way to put it.
Right. We are talking about this mathematical framework that proposes we can accelerate artificial intelligence computations by a million times, like 10 to the power of 6.
Which is just a staggering number to even wrap your head around.
It is. And the craziest part is, we are not doing this by building better microchips or, I don't know, inventing some wild new cooling system for data centers. We are doing it by using pure algebra to restructure the math itself.
Yeah, it represents a complete paradigm shift in how we actually think about computing. Because
Yep.
currently, if you look at how we train these massive AI models, we are completely bottlenecked by the physical reality of silicon.
The hardware itself is the problem.
Exactly. It's what computer scientists call the von Neumann bottleneck. We spend just immense amounts of time and energy moving data back and forth, like from the memory chips to the processing units. It is literally that traffic jam you just mentioned.
Cars idling on the highway.
Right. But the framework outlined in our sources today, it's called the Universal Node Hierarchy, or UNH. It sidesteps this hardware bottleneck entirely. It does this by keeping everything in what they call parameter space.
Okay, so let's unpack this a bit, because imagine you are trying to train a trillion parameter AI model. Normally that takes months, right? And massive warehouses full of supercomputers humming away, drawing enough power to run a small
Oh,
city.
easily a small city, yeah.
But this UNH framework suggests doing it in a matter of minutes, or taking this exact same structural math and using it to solve physical and mathematical problems that we thought were literally impossible to crack.
Which sounds like magic, but it's just really clever math.
Right. But to understand how a 10 to the sixth speedup is even physically possible, we have to understand the fundamental mathematical engine driving it. So our sources focus heavily on this UNH framework. They mention nodes like RAN, ANN, and HPM.
Lots of acronyms.
Lots of acronyms. So before we get lost in the weeds, let's establish what these actually represent.
Well, let's translate those terms into how they actually function.
Yeah.
So the universal node hierarchy is basically a way of organizing numbers and mathematical operations based on their complexity. At the base, you have RAN. That stands for rational algebraic node. Just think of this as degree one complexity. It handles your flat linear relationships.
So the simple stuff.
Right. Then you step up a level to ANN, which is the algebraic nonlinear node. That is degree two, meaning it can handle quadratic operations, things like multiplying variables together.
Got it. And the last one.
Finally, you have HPN, the hierarchical polynomial node. This one is degree K, meaning it can scale up to handle incredibly complex multidimensional mathematics.
So if I'm understanding this, instead of a computer just crunching raw numbers one by one,
Yeah.
we are feeding the computer these nodes, and the nodes already hold different levels of structural mathematical information.
Exactly. And the core mechanism powering these nodes is something called power law algebra.
Power law algebra.
Yeah. The massive insight in these papers is that every single AI operation, whether it is a matrix multiplication or the attention mechanism in a language model or, even the gradient descent that helps the AI learn.
Everything the AI does,
Yeah.
basically.
Right. All of it is really just a polynomial or a rational mathematical operation wearing a disguise.
Wow. Okay, so because it is all just algebra underneath, the UNH framework introduces this concept of delayed collapse. Let me make sure I have this right.
Go for it.
In a standard computer, when you add two numbers or multiply two matrices, the computer calculates the numerical result right then and there. Like, it forces the operation to collapse into a concrete number at every single tiny step.
Yep, immediate calculation.
Right. And that immediate calculation is what causes those memory bottlenecks. It causes numeric overflow, and it's incredibly slow because you're constantly asking the physical hardware to work.
Exactly. The hardware is just constantly fetching numbers, doing the math, storing the new numbers, fetch, compute, store. Okay. Over and over.
It's like going to an incredibly crowded bar and starting a tab.
Yeah.
In the old way, the standard computing way, instead of, starting that tab, you pull out your credit card and run a transaction for every single peanut, every single beer, and every single napkin.
Which would obviously take forever.
Right, you'd completely block the bartender. But with UNH, the bartender just writes down the algebra of your order. They record the symbolic structure of what you owe, and you only swipe the card once at the very end of the night. You delay the collapse of the transaction until it is absolutely necessary to actually pay up.
That analogy hits the exact mechanism perfectly. The UNH encodes the operations algebraically. It delays that final calculation, the collapse, until you actually need the numerical output.
So you aren't constantly swiping the card.
Right. For example, during AI training, instead of calculating the exact numbers at every single layer of the neural network for every single batch of data, you might only collapse the node once every 100 training steps.
And the numbers on this are staggering. The sources point out that current methods require about 10 to the power of 17 operations per step for a trillion parameter model.
Which is just an astronomical amount of computation. It's a huge burden.
But by using UNH with this periodic collapse, you aren't doing the math every step. So that number drops down to 10 to the power of 12.
Yes. And then when you factor in full optimization, like using sparse nodes that just ignore zero values and specialized hardware designed for algebra rather than arithmetic, it delivers a mathematically justified million-fold overall speedup.
10 to the sixth.
10 to the sixth, exactly.
I mean, that is the leap from a 1980s desktop computer to a modern supercomputer, achieved entirely just by rearranging the math.
It really is.
But let's look closer at that bar tab analogy, because if we are delaying the tab, what is the most expensive item on it? In AI, it is undeniably matrix multiplication. That's the brute force engine taking up all the time.
Oh, absolutely. Matrix math is the heavy lifter.
So how does the UNH framework actually neutralize that?
Well, traditional matrix multiplication requires these massive memory-bound loops. The sources describe it as having OMNP time complexity.
Okay, hold on. OMNP time complexity. That is definitely computer science shorthand. Let's break that down for those of us listening who don't spend our days writing code.
Fair enough. So it means the time it takes to solve the problem scales really aggressively with the dimensions of the grid. The letters M, N, and P represent the sizes of the matrices you're multiplying.
So if the matrices get bigger.
If you make those grids even slightly larger, the number of individual multiplication steps just skyrockets.
Yeah.
You're iterating over rows and columns, multiplying and adding over and over. You're trapped in this massive sequential loop.
Just constantly swiping the credit card.
Exactly. But in the UNH framework, this entire matrix product is encoded as a single tensor contraction in that high-level HPN space.
Now, when I hear the word tensor, I usually think of like a fancy 3D spreadsheet. What actually is a tensor contraction? Like, how do you compress thousands of loop iterations into a single move?
A 3D spreadsheet is actually a great way to visualize a tensor. It's a multidimensional array of numbers. And a contraction is an operation that takes that massive spreadsheet and sort of collapses it along certain axes. So instead of walking through this spreadsheet cell by cell, doing the math loop by loop, a tensor contraction evaluates the relationships between all those cells simultaneously.
Wait, simultaneously, how does it do that without completely breaking the computer's memory?
By using a mathematical trick called the polarization identity.
The polarization identity. Okay, what is that?
Instead of calculating a traditional product directly, the math calculates the squared norm of the sum minus the squared norm of the difference, and then divides that whole thing by four.
Oh, wait. Squaring the sum, subtracting the squared difference, dividing by four. If you write that out on a chalkboard, everything cancels out, and that actually just leaves you with the multiplied terms.
Right.
That is a classic algebra trick. I remember learning that.
Exactly. And because this operation is encoded as a network of those degree two ANN nodes, rather than a sequential loop of arithmetic, all of the entries in the matrix are computed structurally in parameter space.
It's a symbolic representation of the multiplication, not a sequential execution of it.
You've got it.
Okay, but I have to push back on this a little bit, though,
Sure.
because if you are just storing the symbolic composition of the matrix multiplication, aren't you just procrastinating? I mean, sure, you didn't swipe your credit card for every single beer, but at the end of the night, that massive mathematical debt still has to be paid.
When you finally collapse the note.
Right. When you collapse it to get your final numbers, doesn't the collapse just take a million times longer because you literally saved up all the work for the end?
That is probably the most critical hurdle this entire theory has to clear.
Right.
Because you're right, if the collapse cost equals the sum of the delete operations, you have gained absolutely nothing.
Right.
But that is exactly where the algebraic structure saves you. Because the delayed terms are all in the form of polynomials, you don't calculate them one by one at the end. You group terms by their denominator, and you use fast polynomial evaluation techniques.
Oh, are you talking about things like Horner's method, where instead of calculating x to the third plus x squared plus x as three entirely separate problems, you sort of factor the x out and solve it as a nested equation?
That is the exact technique. Because you waited, you can look at the whole mathematical tab, see the underlying patterns, and simplify the equation before you ever even attempt to solve it.
You optimize the entire block of math all at once.
Exactly. And this principle applies directly to backpropagation, too, which is how an AI actually learns from its mistakes.
By working backward through the network to adjust its weights.
Right. In traditional computing, you have to traverse the entire computation graph backwards, applying the chain rule step by step to find the gradients. It's incredibly slow.
I can imagine.
But in UNH space, the chain rule is just an algebraic composition of nodes. So you can compute the gradients analytically in one single forward pass.
Wait, one forward pass? You don't have to go backwards at all?
Nope. You store the symbolic composition of all the layers as a single node and just apply the chain rule algebraically. The sources actually note that for a 175 billion parameter model, which is roughly the size of early large language models, this reduces gradient operations by a billionfold.
A billionfold. 10 to the ninth.
10 to the ninth.
A billionfold reduction just by treating the chain rule as a single algebraic object rather than a sequence of steps. That is truly mind-blowing.
It really redefines efficiency.
But, okay, it does raise a major flag for me regarding accuracy.
Okay.
If we are rewriting all these complex operations into this node hierarchy, do we lose anything in translation? Because I assume this isn't just a binary it works or it doesn't situation.
No, it's absolutely a spectrum of fidelity. To map this out, the sources break the UNH taxonomy down into three tiers based on how perfectly they translate into algebra.
Okay, let's go through them. Let's start with tier one. My understanding from the text is that tier one contains your exact power law operations. Things like matrix multiplication, dot products, squared losses, backpropagation. These operations translate perfectly into the node hierarchy with 100% exact fidelity. There is zero loss.
Zero loss, yep.
And crucially, these tier one operations make up 95% of all AI compute.
And that massive chunk being perfectly exact is what makes this entire framework viable in the first place.
Makes sense.
Then you have tier two. These are the approximable operations. Functions like softmax, exponentials, certain activation functions. These operations do not fit perfectly into finite algebra.
Why not?
Because they require infinite series to calculate, like a Taylor series.
Oh, I see. I actually like to think of it this way. Tier one is like using perfect fractions in math, like one-third. It is exactly one-third. There's no debate.
Right.
But tier two is like writing out 0.333333333. It is an approximation. It's technically a truncation because you have to stop writing pre's eventually.
Eventually, you run out of paper.
Right. But if you carry it out far enough using what the papers call pade rational approximations, it is practically indistinguishable from the truth.
Exactly. Because they have to be truncated eventually, tier two operations have about a 99.5% fidelity, and they only make up about 3% of AI compute.
Okay. So if 95% is perfectly exact, and 3% is an incredibly close approximation, there's still this unruly 2% left over. I assume this is where the math refuses to play nice with power laws.
That would be tier three. Tier three is for non-power operations, things like max pooling or discrete if-then logic gates.
So really structural programming stuff.
Yeah, these are fundamentally alien to the polynomial structure. So they only have about an 80% fidelity if you force them into the math.
Ouch.
However, they are rescued by what the sources call conditional nodes.
Meaning instead of forcing an if-then statement to become a polynomial, the node just holds the branch open. It stores the conditions without collapsing them.
Exactly. They hold the logic paths open in parameter space until the very end. So when you weight all this together, your 95% exact tier one, your 3% highly accurate tier two, and your 2% conditionally rescued tier three, the total weighted fidelity for AI mathematics hits roughly 99.7%.
So for all practical purposes, this mathematical simulation is identical to reality. It's an exact replica of the training process, just running a million times faster.
Yes. Practically speaking, you wouldn't notice the difference in the output.
Hmm. Okay, but if this delayed collapse can decode something as complex as a trillion parameter neural network, what happens if we point this exact same mathematical lens at physical reality itself?
This is where it gets really fun.
Because the second half of our sources argues this UNH framework can be applied to impossibly complex physical mathematics with wild efficiency.
Right, this is where we move from just accelerating computation to uncovering the hidden architecture of reality itself. And the core principle here is that every physical event leaves a checksum wake.
A checksum wake, like the wake of a boat, but made of math.
That's a great visual.
The sources focus heavily on pi checksums and e checksums.
Yeah, so think of pi and Euler's number, E, not just as numbers on a page, but as fundamental shapes of nature. Pi governs oscillation, rotation, cycles. The constant E governs exponential growth and decay.
Okay.
The theory asserts that when any physical process happens, it encodes its history into these constant baselines. If you can measure this checksum wake, you can reconstruct the process that created it, even if the process is completely invisible to you now.
I need you to back up on this because how do you actually measure a mathematical wake? The sources talk about using crystal filters.
Yes.
They list things like a cubic lattice, a graphene sheet, a quasicrystal, or a hexagonal crystal. How does a crystal filter measure math?
Well, it's important to clarify, these aren't physical crystals you hold in your hand.
Oh, right.
They are structural mathematical lenses. Each crystal filter forces the checksum data to be interpreted through a specific geometric symmetry. They measure the divergence of the math. Let me give you a concrete example from the sources, the Riemann hypothesis.
Oh, wow. Okay. Finding the spacing of the Riemann zeta zeros is one of the most notoriously difficult, computationally heavy problems in pure mathematics.
Supercomputers literally grind on this for months and get nowhere. But instead of doing the brute force math to find a zero, you pass the zeta function through these different crystal filters. A quasicrystal filter, for instance, has an ordered but non-repeating mathematical pattern. So it actively looks for non-repeating mathematical structures in the checksum.
Interesting.
A cubic lattice samples the math on a rigid grid. You take 10 different filters and you look at where their measurements diverge.
Are they basically acting like mathematical sieves? Like, even if we can't do the direct math, these filters catch the shape of the answer?
Exactly. When the checksum passes through a true zero, all the different crystal filters will suddenly show a minimum in their divergence. They all align.
Oh, I see.
When all 10 crystals agree on that divergence minimum, that minimum corresponds to the exact position of the zero. The sources actually claim this crystal divergence method computes the zeta zero spacing with about 82% efficiency and accuracy.
So it's conditional collapse again. Instead of doing the impossibly hard direct calculation, you surround the problem with 10 different structural questions. And where all 10 answers overlap, that is your solution.
You surround the problem, exactly. And they apply this to prime factorization too. Factoring massive semi-primes is the bedrock of our internet security.
Right, like RSA. If you can easily factor a 2048-bit number, you break RSA encryption. It is supposed to be impossible without a massive quantum computer.
Yet the sources suggest a 78% success rate at computing prime factorizations using this exact same divergence resonance.
Wait, really? How?
Because a large number has a characteristic pi checksum spectrum. The prime factors imprint a hidden harmonic mode onto the number's binary structure. So by using a hexagonal crystal filter to cluster the residues, the divergence resonance peaks exactly at the values of the prime factors.
It is literally listening for the structural weakness in the number. It's looking at the shadow the prime numbers cast on the overall checksum. That is incredible.
It really is.
And there is one more example in the sources that really grounds this in reality, I think. Reconstructing shredded documents.
Oh, this one perfectly illustrates the power of the checksum wake. If you have a document that has been shredded and burned, you don't need to read the content to put it back together. You just mathematically model the boundary curves of the individual shred pieces.
Wait, how does a physical tear on a piece of paper have anything to do with pi? Pi is for circles.
Think about the physical shape of a tear. It's not a perfectly straight line, right?
Right.
It curves, it jaggedly waves back and forth. Every single tiny curve on that torn edge can be mapped mathematically as an arc, which is a piece of a circle.
Oh.
And anytime you are dealing with curvature, arc lengths, or oscillating waves, the underlying mathematical signature is governed by pi. So that physical tear has a geometric checksum derived from all those compounding arcs?
That makes total sense. Every curve has a unique mathematical signature.
Exactly. And two pieces of paper that were originally torn from each other will have boundary curves with perfectly complementary checksums. If you add the pi checksum of edge A to the pi checksum of edge B, they will sum to the baseline checksum of a straight continuous line.
It's like a jigsaw puzzle where the pieces mathematically glow when you hold the right ones next to each other.
Yes. You just build a compatibility graph of the complementary checksums, and the document essentially reassembles itself without you having to analyze a single letter of text.
That's wild.
The sources cite an 84% efficiency rate for this.
And what is unifying all of these examples, the Riemann zeros, the prime numbers, the shredded documents, is the asymmetry of the computation, right?
Precisely. It is incredibly hard to compute these things directly, but it is very easy to verify if the answer is correct once you have used the structural filters to find the overlap. I mean, you just multiply the two primes together to see if they equal the big number.
It's the ultimate shortcut. You bypass the brute force calculation by reading the structural wake, making an incredibly highly educated guess using the crystal filters, and then verifying the collapse.
It proves that critical thinking and viewing problems through abstract structural lenses can completely outpace raw computational brute force. It shifts the burden from calculating everything sequentially to simply asking the right structural questions in parameter space.
So when you step back and look at the whole picture we've covered today, we are looking at a fundamental shift in how we process information. By treating math as algebraic structures rather than immediate calculations, we can delay the collapse. We can put the math on a bar tab and group the polynomial equations using Horner's method to pay it all at once.
Exactly.
By doing that, we can sidestep the physical bottleneck of silicon memory and speed up AI computations by a million times. We can simplify massive matrix loops into single tensor contractions. And beyond AI, we can use these crystal filters to act as mathematical sieves, solving incredibly complex problems with roughly 80% efficiency by catching the shadows of the answers.
It's beautifully elegant.
Mathematics itself is not just a tool we use on hardware. Mathematics is the ultimate hardware upgrade.
It completely reframes our relationship with computation. We do not have to be bottlenecked by the physical limits of a microchip if we can just map the structural logic of the universe.
Which leaves me with one final mind-bending thought for you to mull over. We talked about how physical events leave a mathematical checksum wake that we can decode using this concept of delayed collapse.
Right.
Well, what if our physical reality itself operates on delayed collapse? What if the universe isn't rendering every single atom, every single quantum interaction at every single moment? What if the universe is just holding off on computing the math, keeping it all in an algebraic parameter space until someone actually looks at it?
Now that is a divergence worth exploring.
Until next time, keep diving deep.